please call the roll?
Mr. Smetana.
Here.
Ms. Shoemaker.
Here.
Koch. Mr. Lucchese.
Here.
Mr. Dombrowski.
Here.
Ms. Davis. Chairman Martin.
Here.
We have five.
All right, so we have a quorum. Thing on the agenda this evening is the approval of the minutes from our last meeting on August 18th. Everybody had an opportunity to review these minutes. We want to make a motion to approve them.
Move to approve the minutes.
Is there a second? Any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Calling the roll of members who were at the meeting. Mr. Smetana.
Yes.
Ms. Shoemaker.
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski.
Yes.
Chairman Martin.
Yes. All right, the next matter on the agenda, findings of fact for the property at 105 Thatcher Avenue. And this was a part of the hearing that we held on August 18th. Those findings of fact were distributed for review to all the members of the board. If we all had an opportunity to look at them. Any questions, any changes? You want to make a motion to approve these findings of fact relating to 105 Thatcher.
Move to approve the findings of fact in the 105 Thatcher.
A second?
Second.
Any discussion? You call the roll, please.
Chairman Martin.
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski.
Yes.
Ms. Shoemaker.
Yes.
Ms. Matana.
Yes.
All right, at this point, we are going to begin the public hearings on the various applications that are pending tonight. We ask everybody who intends to address the board to please stand at this time and get sworn in.
To those who will testify at the public hearing, you are reminded that the River Forest Village Code makes it unlawful for any person to knowingly make a false statement of material fact to the village in connection with any application, report, affidavit, oath, certification, or attestation. Violations are punishable as a petty offense with a fine. Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm you will give true testimony relative to the matter before this Zoning Board of Appeals?
Looked at Ms. Davis. All right, so the first application we're going to hear tonight is the request for zoning variation for 935 Franklin. Would please identify yourself so we've got it in the record and make your presentation.
Good evening. My name is Patrick McGinnis. I'm an attorney at Donatelli & Coulis, and we represent the applicants Dave and Sherry Delaney, who are owners of the property at 935 Franklin. Applicants are seeking a variance to the front yard setback requirements in order to seek a front yard setback of 59 feet as opposed to the requirement that we are required by the village code of 72.1 feet. Applicants' requested variance meets all the standards for a variation. First, the unique physical condition of the property would make a strict enforcement of the code a hardship to the applicants. The property is on a unique block that has five properties, one of which is the applicant's property, which is vacant land. The property to the south is actually used to be a coach house that went with this property. So it has a front yard setback of 149.2 feet. And then two of the properties are actually corner lots which don't face Franklin. And then the fifth property has a front yard setback of 58.9 feet. So the 59-foot front yard setback that the applicants are seeking would actually be in line with this and would be more consistent for the block as a whole and would also be consistent with the houses across the street, which have a very similar front yard setback to each other as well. Secondly, the unique physical condition was not created by the applicants. Applicants purchased the property in November of 2021. It was vacant land at that time, and nothing that they've done created this unique physical condition. Further, 59 feet is actually still further back than the house that was previously there and was demolished. So either way, they'd be moving the house further back than it previously was. Third, the variance would not be applicable generally to other properties. As indicated, the block is and the property itself are unique. There's no other blocks in the village that would be similar to that, those characteristics. Thus, granting the variance here would not make it applicable to other properties. Fourth, the variance would not provide an economic gain to the applicant. Allowing for the variance to the front yard setback doesn't change the size of the house that can be built there, the number of bathrooms, the number of bedrooms. So the economic value of the property is the same either way. The variance is only being sought for aesthetics to the property and the block as a whole. Fifth, the variance wouldn't be detrimental to the public welfare or the use or enjoyment of the properties in the neighborhood. In fact, denying the variance would actually put the property further back into the backyards of the surrounding properties. The property that would be most impacted is the property to the north, which is 947 Franklin. And the neighbors actually wrote a letter in support of the variance because they feel 59 feet would be better than 72 feet. It would make the property not in their backyard, and they feel architecturally for the block as a whole, it would be more cohesive. Sixth, the variance wouldn't impair the adequate supply of light and air to the adjacent properties. Actually, enforcement of the code and not allowing the variance would actually have a more of a detrimental impact on the light and air of the adjacent properties. It would put this property's home further back and into the backyard of the property that's to the north and closer to the property that's to the south as well. Seventh, granting the variance wouldn't unduly tax the public utilities or facilities. As indicated, the size of the home doesn't change, so there would be no change to the impact that the property would have on public utilities or facilities. Finally, eighth, there's no other means for the variance requested to avoid the hardship to the applicants and or the adjacent properties. Strict enforcement of the code would lead to a property that has too much front yard and not enough backyard and would interfere with the applicant's enjoyment of the property. Also, as indicated, the neighbors to the north feel like enforcement of the code would put the property further back into their backyard and impair their enjoyment of the property as well. And the applicants are seeking the minimum variance needed for the best and most reasonable use of the property. So for these reasons, we request that their application for variance for the front yard setback requirements be granted.
As you arrive at 59 feet.
So that's essentially exactly the same setback as the other, that fifth property that's on the block, basically to allow it to be equal with that house.
But the house to the north is 60. Why don't you use that?
So that's a corner lot. It doesn't actually even face Franklin. So while it's considered the front yard setback for village code requirements, for how it's being used at the side yard.
Sold that lot to your client?
Don't believe so. So we did? Okay. So, yes.
All right. Any other questions? Anybody in the audience that wishes to address the board concerning this proposed request for a variance for 935 Franklin? All right. So, anything else you want to tell us?
No.
All right, so we'll close the public portion of the hearing related to this variation request, discuss it ourselves, and determine if we're ready to make a recommendation to the trustee. Any comments?
Chairman. Sorry, Chairman Martin and Mr. Raddatz, as I mentioned in my email, I'm the across the street neighbor from this lot, and I'm supportive of this variance, you know, setting it back too far would really eliminate their backyard. This lot has been on the market forever. We're just happy to have someone who's willing to build it out. And I think for conformity and uniformity of the block, this variance will really make the house look better and make the entire block look better.
Anybody else have any comments?
Unique situation, that block will only force it as much as they are.
Somebody want to
make a motion to approve?
So is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded that we recommend to the Village Board of Trustees request for a variation for the front yard setback be question.
Mr. Smetana?
Yes.
Ms. Shoemaker?
Yes.
Mr. Lucchese?
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski?
Yes.
Ms. Davis?
Yes.
Chairman Martin?
Yes. So that'll be the recommendation of the Zoning Board of Appeals to the Village Trustees. check with Mr. Raddatz to find out when it might be on the agenda for the trustee. Right, the next matter we have this evening is a zoning variation request property at 7227 Thomas. Whoever's going to add, if you identify yourself at the podium and proceed.
Good evening. My name is Lance Shelsey. I'm with A2020 Architects on behalf of Mark Solick, my client. I am here representing 7227 second floor addition to a structure. So this, what we're doing right now, there is a deteriorated terrace, rooftop terrace that isn't used by anybody, causing leaks in the existing building. So what we are proposing to do here is to enclose that, remove the existing roof terrace, which is a unsightly hazard currently, make it part of the overall building, keeping with the same context of the building, same roof lines, not increasing the footprint whatsoever, just using straight up from the existing first floor masonry walls to the second floor. Currently, the building is 8 units. It is going to remain 8 units. We just want to enclose and get rid of this roof terrace. The hardship here for this property is that it is actually an R3 zoning, and in an R3 zoning, it does not meet the minimum lot standards. So we are doing what we can do to improve this property. 8 units, we are also trying to get as close as possible to the required parking. Right now, there's only 6 existing parking stalls there. We are going to restripe the parking area in the back and add additional 2 more stalls, which will create 1 per unit. So in address the standards, so the existing property consists of 8 dwelling units. Physical surroundings will not be affected by this. We're building straight up. We're not changing any drainage, any grading. Unique physical condition did not result in any person having interest in the property. This is a lot of record. Currently, it does not meet the minimum requirements in an R3 zoning. Conditions may not be applicable to the other property within the same zoning. Again, this is a substandard lot for this zoning where others may have the 17,000 and change minimum. Economic gain is not the motivation here. We are just trying to improve the visual character of the street, getting rid of this kind of eyesore deteriorated roof terrace that nobody uses. And we're going to be matching the brick. It's Chicago common brick. We're going to match the brick around the exterior so it all matches textural with the roof lines. Granting the variation shall not be detrimental to the public welfare. So there is no, I mean, this will increase value of other properties. We have multiple letters. I think we have like 50 letters from neighbors in support of this project. The addition will not impair adequate light. It's not going to change any setbacks. The setback is what it is. We are just going vertically up. There is ample air and adequate light around the property as it exists. No tax, public utilities, facilities. There will be no change in the public utilities. No other proposed location can be remedied, being that this property is less than 17,000 square feet. He doesn't have the opportunity to expand it at all. We're just trying to for the neighborhood.
Else you want to tell us?
Want to add anything?
You got to please approach the podium and identify yourself so we've got it in the record.
Good evening. So my name is Mark Solak. So I own the property, the 7221-27 Thomas Street, about 6 months now. So we bought it from Concordia. So everyone knows Concordia, I guess. So we're trying to improve the property and just bring it to just better standards, because being like very deteriorated, not only like the roof terrace, that's just very unsafe, and then eyesore. So, and I think it's a hardship to the neighborhood, to the kind of like neighboring properties, how right now it looks that that's the front corner, Thomas and Bonnie Bray. So it's just kind of in like an eyesore. So it's just like a, you know, wooden balcony nobody's using. So there's a lot of, and like damage to the property because it's just like a, you know, flat roof and no repairs and maintenance that you kind of have to do. And they've done it over years, Concordia. It's just, again, just, you know, it's not a good use to anyone. Again, we'd be staying within the same footprint, same density. All the apartments are two bedrooms, so going to remain two bedrooms. So not improving that. We're staying within the footprint that we're not going any wider or any higher than the existing building. So we're just trying to enclose what's basically has not been used, and it's just been like an eyesore to the neighborhood.
Any questions for the
that you're not including number of bedrooms for this particular unit, but you're just increasing?
Yeah. There's a one a unit below that has that extra space. That's a two bedroom.
Okay.
So basically, okay, we're gonna be the same way. So we're just enclosing that space. That just again, in there and not. Don't know why they did that. So they ran out of money when they built it. So they just you know, intended to finish that. So that space is just like, again. Thank you.
Our plans to match the roof line, the existing roof line?
Correct. Okay. So currently a hip roof now, and it is designed to maintain the hip roof. Obviously, same slope, overhangs.
Do any of the units of the building currently qualify as affordable housing under the River Forest Ordinance? Do any of the units in the building currently qualify as affordable housing units under the River Forest Ordinance?
I don't know the answer to that question.
Just make it easy for us and we can record it.
Don't know the answer, so but we own some other properties like across the street in Oak Park, so we get a question a lot. So I think that goes to the level of income, right, for applicants. So we're not restricting anyone from applying, like it was used mainly like a student housing so far. So we're not exclusively or non-exclusively like making any limits. So that answers the question. So
it doesn't answer it to me.
No.
Do you recall what the standard is for affordable housing under our ordinance?
I'm not familiar.
Okay.
I don't have it on top of my head.
Oh, if you give me a second.
Yeah.
Another thing, if I may add, so we have 50 some letters in support, like for this variance and also the variance next door that will, you know, one of the next variances here. And then, like anyone we talked, any of the neighbors we talked, they were in support. They were just like, yes, we're in support, you know, thanks for doing that, because just this has been just like, you know, left out. So,
I think we have the form letter that you circulated to mm-hmm. to get.
Village's affordable housing plan. the definition of affordable housing under the Village's adopted affordable housing plan includes an owner-occupied affordability chart of, and are these rental or owned?
These are.
rentals apartments, yeah.
Okay. So for rentals, a studio would be $889 a month. A one-bedroom would be $952 a month. A two-bedroom would be $1,140 a month. A three-bedroom would be $1,300.
You don't have any three-bedrooms, right?
No.
All right.
What are the sizes? Are they all the same? Are they all two-bedrooms?
Yeah, so the six of the two-bedrooms are small size, like small apartment. I don't know, honestly, about 780 maybe square feet, small.
How many bedrooms?
Two bedrooms.
All two bedrooms,
right.
Okay. And what's the monthly rate for two bedrooms?
$1,143.
All right, so are any of the units in this building currently rent for $1,143 or whatever the, I'm close to that number?
They rented for like more than that, so slightly more than that. So,
right. Do you intend to make any of these units affordable housing units?
Again, we're not excluding anyone. We just have to understand that better. So I don't know if I can make that call right now. I wasn't ready for that. So we wanted to, the building and I don't know what else to say. So I don't have the answer.
The answer is no.
I don't know. So I don't know. I don't know the rest of the requirements. So
that's all the questions I have. Anybody else have questions? Anybody else in the audience want to address us concerning this request for a variation at 7227 Thomas?
My name is Ruth Rico. I'm a neighbor of this building. I live at 1020 North Harlem. And during the COVID especially, our neighbors walked frequently around our whole neighborhood and became aware of the derelict building that Mr. Solak is working on. We were frequently complaining to the owner, and they would come by with some improvements for a bit of time, just to the trashing that was going on of the neighborhood. So when we found out that the building had been sold, we were very eager to find out who had bought it and what their intention was. We have been very pleased to see the work being done in taking care of some of the external problems that were inherited by the new owner. And we look forward to having that property become less of an eyesore and more of an asset to our community.
Questions? Thank you. Anybody else in the audience want to address us concerning 7227 Thomas? Anything else you want to tell us?
Oh, that's what I said, yes.
Okay, thank you again. We'll close the public portion of the hearing and decide whether to make a recommendation. Anybody got any concerns about this? You want to make a motion?
Motion to approve.
All right, so it's been moved and seconded that we recommend to the Board of Trustees the approvals for variations of Section 10-10-4 and 10-10-7 of the zoning code as it relates to this property on Thomas.
10-point.
Oh, that's the one on.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's sorry. That's the other one.
All right. So we just got
two
variations.
You were testing.
Already looking at the next one.
All right, so we've got, it's been moved and seconded that we recommend that these two variations be approved. Question? Call the roll, please.
Chairman Martin.
Yes.
Ms. Davis.
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski.
Yes.
Mr. Lucchese.
Yes.
Ms. Shoemaker.
Yes.
Mr. Smetana.
Yes.
All right, so that'll be the recommendation of the Zoning Board of Appeals to the trustees. The next matter that we have this evening is a zoning variation request for 1037 Bonnie Bray.
Again, good evening. My name is Lance Shelsey, 8020 Architects, representing Mark Solak, owner of 1037-1039 Bonnie Bray. This particular property is an existing two-unit dwelling structure. Currently has a two-car detached garage in the rear yard. Again, this is an R3 zoned property. Again, it does not meet the minimum requirement of an R3 property. Although the zoning ordinance requires dwelling units, two parking spaces per dwelling unit, and in addition to the two per dwelling unit, one guest space. So in order for us to achieve that on a lot of lesser square footage, we are proposing to build another detached garage in the rear yard. So we're asking for setback variation, side yard setback variation, and then of course lot coverage and so forth because of the lot size. The setback on the south of the property, we're asking for a 2-foot reduction, which leaves us a 1-foot setback on the south property line. This garage will be constructed of brick veneer to match the existing garage that's there and the existing structure. We are also proposing two guest spaces between the two garages that exist, the one on the north and the new proposed. So these do meet the stall size required by the zoning ordinance. Reason we need this variation request is because of 90 degree parking is an 8.5-foot wide stall in River Forest. So we need to move this garage over a couple of feet in order to achieve that 8.5-foot parking width. So what this does is keeps the parked cars off of the driveway because this will be a shared driveway with the 7221-7227 property. And I believe Mark is in the process of developing an easement for this shared driveway. Also, this will keep cars out of sight from the front yard. Everything will be in the back. The guest parking included, and of course the garage will house two more cars instead of having a possibility of six cars exposed in the yard or in the front yard. Again, we are asking for this. This is an existing two dwelling unit. The zoning ordinance requires four stalls, two guest parking. Currently, there's only two stalls, and then obviously outside parking exists, but we are looking to enclose two more stalls. The physical condition did not result in any person having interest in the property. This is, again, a lot of record that does not meet the minimum criteria for an R3 zoning. Conditions may not be applicable to other property within the same zoning. Again, other properties of this similar will perhaps meet, which ours doesn't. No fault to the owner. Economic gain is not the motivation. It's not. We're just trying to keep cars off of the driveway, off of the street, so forth. And obviously, he is willing to spend the extra money on doing a brick garage instead of a sided garage or what have you. Granting the variation will not be detrimental to public welfare. It will not cause any injuries or anything to any other value of the other property. As a matter of fact, it'll enhance the properties next door. There won't be any cars. You know, everything will be in the garages, in the backyards. Proposed garage will not impair adequate light and air. It doesn't affect any of the area around the neighboring properties. This is totally in the rear yard of the property. Granting a variation will not unduly tax public utilities. There is no change in the public utilities will occur on this. No other means. Proposed location can be remedied. Of course, again, this is a lot that is way below the 1,000 and some change square feet. So there is no other way to on that property without eating more up of the backyard, more paving, which we're trying to the minimum so that they will enjoy the backyard.
So is the driveway, if this uses, adjacent to the north property?
Correct.
Not the south property. Okay.
How many bedrooms are in each unit?
3 bedrooms.
Is the rental for either of these units going to be less per month?
Well, so the Bonnie Bray property, we wanted to sell to the next homeowner. So we wouldn't be renting that to the, would be a rental property for us, in other words. So the Thomas property that we had before, we look forward to be your neighbors for years to come. So the Bonnie Bray, beautiful property. So, you know, so R3 zoning. So, you know, both units look like single family homes, very spacious. So we wanted to sell to next homeowner. Like the other like properties on the same street on Bonnie Bray, there are like basically 4 total with Bonnie Bray that kind of look alike. They all been basically were sold and occupied by homeowners. So the answer would be wouldn't be a rental property. So
do each of the units have a separate PIN?
No, it's on one PIN. So that's one PIN. We wanted to separate that, so that's kind of in process. And we're still within the deadline with Cook County to apply. So we have documents ready for a petition, so we're going to do that. Of course, the garage also, you know.
Garage is going to increase the value of the property.
And also the value of the neighboring properties. It's also a complement, like the brick of the subject property. And pretty much all the properties on that block, on that street, are brick properties, brick garages. So, and again, not having that variance would just not allow us to put enough cars between the garages to meet the zoning requirements, you know, from River Forest. And then would have that cars attendant parking or somewhere in the backyard taking the green space. Across the street is a Concordia University. Most of the time, you know, that street is packed with cars. So it's just, you know, for us to, you know, be good neighbors as well and be able to use that, you know, lot we have. We ask for the couple of feet extra variance that would allow us to, you know, build the garage and have enough space, the parking space.
Your architect indicated that you were considering kind of easement arrangement.
Right.
Along the driveway so that the Thomas property could make use of this driveway for ingress and egress, correct?
Exactly. So it's for the two properties, the Thomas and the Bonnie Bray property. And the Bonnie Bray, the 103739, is the only from the out of 3, so 4 properties total on the street, that has a shared driveway with another property. So it's also like a bit of a hardship. The other properties, they do kind of have the shared driveway. For the two units, we have a shared driveway with the apartment building
next door. Are you willing to amend your application to indicate that you're going to that kind of cross easement would be part of what we're recommending to the village trustee.
You mean like the easement? I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question.
All right. Are you willing to amend your application to include as part of the application your statement, your promise that there's going to be an easement over
oh, yeah.
the driveway?
The easement for 100% because
yes,
the property, the Thomas Street property that I will hold, need that easement even more than Bunny Bray property. So at this point, we own the two properties, so we have to make that of record because well, let's say if we sold to homeowners and then someone's going to put a fence, we have no access to the Thomas Street property. So there
okay,
has
so
to be.
Do I understand that the answer to the question
yes.
is yes? Okay.
Yes.
Any other questions? Well, it seems to me that what we've got to decide is it better to have green space in the back or parking? Anybody else in the audience want to address this?
Survey doesn't indicate marked. Photos indicates that there's striped spaces.
Two, besides the two-car garage, two.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, the two sides. So we would have two-car garage, and two in between.
Okay.
Meet the requirement.
Did you explore adding on to the existing garage so you avoid a new... Spaces, southernmost or
southernmost
part of the lot, so that you need a variance for.
If I understand correctly, Lance, right? So if we do that, we would not have the size of the 8.5 foot width for the parking. That's why we're moving that garage that extra 2 feet. Have then. You know, 17 feet in between, then we can fit two cars.
So this lot, currently I believe is 60 feet across. So if we were to expand that garage, basically it's a four-car garage. Four-car garage, doors 15 feet plus you need some sort of a column or brick or something in between 2 feet, foot and a half. So we are exceeding that a foot width. I would end up with about a four. So if we did 20 and 20 and then 2 feet in between, right, that's 42 feet. I have 18 feet there. I would be parking right along step back property. I'd be parking right along the property line right there.
Building wouldn't be there.
Correct. It would be moved to the north.
How do you maintain the south facade of the new garage with only a
in the south facade?
Yeah, I mean once it's up.
Well, you would.
I'm
well,
tricky here.
The facade is masonry, so obviously minimal maintenance on the masonry, and of course the ground between it, mulch, and obviously you couldn't go back there with a lawnmower, but.
Other questions about Then we'll close the public portion of the hearing. We may have done that. Question as to what we want to do. Have any problems with this?
On the one hand, I don't think they're doing expansion of the building or the occupancy of the building enhancement to garage. A little concerned about, you know, meaning project. There's only a foot.
The overall better for the block if we're going to look at it. Block as far as better for the block as a whole.
You also have any comments?
No, I think I'd be comfortable. We just
send this to the trustee. One. Garage be constructed on the owner entering into an easement with adjacent property to provide for properties. Property.
I'll make that motion, moving the variations on the three section.
Okay.
All right, so it's been moved and seconded that we recommend to the Village Board of Trustees the approval of the variations from sections 410-107, 108. Items that the new garage be constructed of masonry construction and that there be an easement entered into between property and the property to provide for joint ingress and egress over the existing. Right. Call the roll, please.
Chairman Martin.
Yes.
Ms. Davis.
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski.
Yes.
Mr. Lucchese.
Yes.
Ms. Shoemaker.
Yes.
Mr. Smetana.
Yes.
All right, so that'll be the recommendation of the Zoning Board of Appeals to the Board of Trustees. Raddatz, and he'll tell you, and we'll finish the procedure here and have the findings of fact approved so that we can present it to the.
Thank you.
Next matter is the public hearing on the fence variation request for 1534 Park.
Hello, my name is Kevin Morgan. I'm the owner of 1534 Park Apartments LLC, which is the owner of record of 1534 Park. The subject property is a six-unit multifamily apartment building. The purpose of my variance is that I'd like to enclose the perimeter of the front yard of the property with an aluminum or a steel fence. The current zoning of the property is C1, which allows a 4-foot fence. I'd like the fence to be higher than 4 feet, preferably 5 feet, I think at this point is what I'd like to do after discussing what's available with contractors. Most of the property on the block and in the neighborhood is zoned R2. As you know, R2 allows a fence height of up to 6 feet. So I see 4, 5, and 6 feet fences on the front yard of properties on the block and in the neighborhood. Quickly work through the standards. As mentioned, this property is zoned commercial, C1. Most apartment buildings in the village have a different zoning, R3 or something like that. But I think due to the proximity to North Avenue, this one was pulled into a commercial zoning district. So I was surprised to find out that the limitation of the fence was 4 feet on this. Work my way through the standards. The current zoning allowance, zoning ordinance allows for a 4-foot height for the properties designated as C1, and we'd like to exceed that up to the height allowed in the adjacent R2 properties. We're actually not looking to go up to 6 feet. We're only looking to go 5 feet at this point. The neighborhood and the village have many properties that have a fence and a height in excess of 4 feet, as is allowed on properties with an R2 zoning designation, which is properties on the block and in the area. We're not doing this for the purpose of economic gain. I'd like to enclose the yard for the use of my tenants that live in the property. There's no green space behind the property. That's where there's a 4-car parking garage and some other parking spots. So it's actually a nice yard that's not really enjoyed or used by the tenants. And I think it's a busy street. There's a shared driveway with a building directly to the north, which is at least a dozen units. There's a lot of cars going in and out of that shared driveway, and fence would provide a safer environment and also allow some landscaping along the fence. Provide a little bit more privacy and usefulness to the space. I might add, I live in the building, so I'd personally like to use the front yard of the property. And I have a dog, and they're a pet-friendly building, so the other tenants have also expressed interest in property for that purpose. This variation will not be any way detrimental to the public welfare or injurious to other properties in the neighborhood, and in fact is consistent with many other properties in the neighborhood. Proposed variance will not increase the danger or fire or endanger public safety or diminish or impair the property values in the neighborhood. And again, it's consistent with many other properties in the neighborhood and the village. The proposed variance will not unduly tax public utilities and facilities in the area. Achieve the safety and provide consistency with the fence height of other properties in the neighborhood. I'm asking to increase the height from 4 feet to 5 feet. That's it.
What other properties in that block have a 6-foot?
Well, on that block?
Yeah.
I don't know how you define the block. If you define it all the way down to Division, there are
the block from Lemoyne to North Avenue. There's a 4-foot fence at Lemoyne, the corner.
At the corner, there's a 4-foot fence, yeah. There's some 6-foot fence right adjacent to the university there on the west side of Park. I didn't measure it, but it's definitely taller than 4. It's at least 5 and possibly 6.
There's nothing on that block.
No.
But if you go as far south as Greenfield, there's 2 houses on the west, on the east side of one on the corner of Lemoyne and one. Those are the only fences I saw drove down that down Park Avenue from North Mayfield. Why is it necessary to have more than a 4-foot fence? Could you explain that to us?
Well, I just felt, given the traffic that's going by that property, between vehicle traffic up and down Park, vehicle traffic up and down North Avenue, there's a lot of foot traffic, bicycle traffic. I just felt like a 4-foot fence was too low for a multifamily building, and it seemed like a possibility that someone could reach over the fence or jump over the fence fairly easily. So a 5-foot fence seemed like a more of a barrier to me.
Units in this building?
Yes.
And are they all 2-bedroom units or 3-bedroom?
5 2-bedroom, 1 1-bedroom.
I asked this question of all the applicants. Do any of these units rent for a price that meets the village standards of affordable housing?
Well, I do have one tenant that's participating in the Cook County Housing Program, often called Section 8 voucher program. So I believe that one probably would qualify.
What's the rent on that unit?
I believe it's 11 something between what the tenant pays and what I receive from Cook County. Significantly under market for a 2-bedroom.
2-bedroom. Other questions? Anybody here in the audience want to address us concerning the request for variation for this property on Park Avenue? Morning.
Yes.
Okay. Will you please come up to the podium? You walk in front of me. Identify yourself so we got it in the room.
Good evening. My name is Donna Murray. I am a condo owner at 1538 Park Avenue, and I am in the building that was mentioned that is just north of the proposed fence revision property. And I am one of 12, exactly 12 condos that are in that building. And I, of course, sent this note out to all the owners, and we've all had conversations, and at least 3 have responded to your board electronically, asking for this to not be granted. Many reasons, but I know that you have several standards you wish us to address, and I will certainly do that. But I wanted to say just briefly, is it true that C1 does allow a fence out front of the property? Okay, just want to make sure I clarified that. And is there any transparency required for it? In other words, see-through?
Yes.
Okay. Good. Thank you for answering those questions. There are no 6-foot fences on the block. I can answer that question emphatically for you. In fact, there are none to the university. Corners are allowed, certainly, the small 4-foot wrought iron see-through fences, because, of course, people need to enjoy a portion of their yard, and they're on a corner, and therefore they are granted that. But facing the street, walk down the block, I do it every day with my dog, and there are no 6-foot fences. So I can emphatically clear that up for you, or at least repeat it. I know you do. Thank you. Another mention was made that our driveway is shared with the building. That is untrue. We do not have a shared driveway. There is no easement. I was told there was an easement, but we certainly investigated that. We pulled our own plat survey, our own information, and our lawyer actually addressed that building, and Mr. Morgan, indicating that we are abutted, we are not shared, and that we need to leave both of our driveways open so we both can utilize our driveways. We are not ever on their driveway. They're often on ours because they park along their own driveway. Just wanted to get that out because we're not shared. Okay. The standards. I also wrote a very long letter, which you already heard, so I'll just go with the touch on the finer points or the bullet points. I saw no letters of support in the packet provided online, and I spoke to many of my neighbors outside of my own building, and I also heard no words of support. There is no one that I can find on our block that I've spoken to that is in favor of a 6-foot aluminum fence. More importantly, this aluminum fence is going to create a very dangerous blind spot. We are 12 families in our condo building alone. Many of us have children, at least half of us have children. While mine is a grown college student, she drives in and out of that driveway. She also walks past that driveway. But the kids all the way down that block northbound, and there are at least 6 or 7 of those homes that all have young people in it, and they actually drive their bikes and their big wheels and their fun carts all the way down to our building. And usually their parents say, stop at that driveway because we want you back away from North Avenue. The important thing to consider is, though, if they go 1 inch past that driveway, there's no way to see beyond this proposed fence and now higher proposed fence as a driver around that corner for those children and adults. And it is true, we get a lot of pedestrians down Park. But just so you're aware, I know you're aware, sorry, but I just want to say it out loud for the record, there's no turn onto Park. Do people violate that? Sure they do. But it's not a common place you can't turn into that thing. So there is not all that much traffic going that is alluded to. So I'm going back to my standards real quickly. Thank you for your patience. The standard about the hardship, I can't tell if that hardship was for the neighborhood or the owner, but in either circumstance, there is no hardship for the owner to put up a fence because this grassy area is still there and beautiful. The hardship for the neighbors will be, again, the blind spot, the terrible 6-foot aluminum fence. When you look down that block, it's a beautiful yard for 10 homes. It's going to decrease our property values. Point blank, having that green space blocked off by a 6-foot fence will decrease our property values. And I've been in River Forest for over 10 years. I lived on the other side of River Forest by Harlem and North. My brother and I, my family and I have redone many buildings here in River Forest. We've loved living here. It is our home. It is our community. I've been here over 10 years personally, and I know what our aesthetic is. And our aesthetic is very important to us. And therefore, we have rules to maintain those aesthetics. And if those rules are varied for someone who wants a 6-foot fence in a beautiful neighborhood, that even though, yes, we are at the end and right on North Avenue, we're still a neighborhood. I know almost everybody in my block. I walk my dog. They all come out, say hello, vice versa. If I get the wrong mail, I bring it right to them. I know their names. We are acquainted. So I just wanted to make sure that you were aware that we are a neighborhood and we don't want a 6-foot fence erected in it. Bear with me one more second. So I ask you to deny this application, please. Thank you.
So just so there's no misunderstanding.
Yes.
Nobody's talking about a solid fence.
I understand.
Whether it's 4 feet high or 6 feet high. There are standards in our code that say, you know, how much to be. So.
Thank you.
Okay. Questions for Ms. Murray?
I respond.
Wait, look, if this other gentleman wants to speak, then you get the last word.
My name is Dallas Hutzler at 1530 Park Avenue. We're residential home on the south side of the property that we're talking about, 1534 Park. At first, this is here, I was upset when I heard about a 6-foot high fence. More upset, I looked at the commercial, see one fence that could be 4 feet high with 50% see-through. While the one he's proposing can be up to 6 feet, he just said it would be five and a half. That's after I got the application from completely filled out. So when you look at a 5-foot fence with 80% see-through, first of all, I don't think it's a safety hazard when it goes out in his side that he's talking about, and as she was saying, it's not a safety issue. It was a safety issue. Also, as a neighbor with Kevin, we've had several discussions, and he's always followed through with what we talked about. A good neighbor. I think he wants to have that fence there for his own use. Right now, I hate to say this, Donna, but the condo building used that actually more often than Kevin does for their dogs. And for I've seen him play baseball on there. I know that family's moved, but it's been like a playground for them. I think a 5-foot fence would give him the property that he needs for his tenants and his pet, which is a beautiful dog, by the way. I have shrubs up that's covered, actually, from my side. And I'm sure he's going to put up some landscaping. He's done it in the past. I just think it's not going to harm the property values. I at first thought it would. Put up a 6-foot high in a residential area, I was furious. You can ask Cliff. I'm up here twice. Once I read his application, I don't see a problem with it. 5-foot fence with 80% see-through, I'm fine with it. He'll landscape it. Actually, it's more of a safety thing on my side because he'll have a dog in that yard occasionally. Most people are afraid of dogs this size. That might help the safety on my property. So, although we do have cameras. So, my recommendation is to approve his fence a 5-foot high. I do want to say one other thing. He can't put up a C1 fence without approval from the zoning board. The front yard with 50% see-through, to me, that would be a safety hazard. He can do it if he wants to. So I wish for the board to approve a 5.5-foot fence in the front yard in 34 Park. Thanks for listening. Thank you.
Anybody else in the audience? So, Mr. Morgan, if you want to come up, what your application is, that would
be sure. I just want to respond to and clarify a couple things here. It is true, I think I have the ability to put a 4-foot fence in because of the C1 zoning. My intent absolutely is to conform to the residential standard as far as the percentage that you can see through, whether 80%, I think it is. It was never my intent to do anything approaching 50%. I think with the 80% see through, that the safety issues of the fence possibly creating a blind spot there, as cars are pulling out of the driveway and there's a sidewalk, would be mitigated by conforming to the residential standard as far as the type of fence. Also, you know, I live in this property. I'm lived in the village from 2008 to 2018. I moved out of the village. I've moved back into the village. I made a significant investment in this property, and I'm living in the property. And never did I think this fence would be perceived as some sort of detriment to the neighborhood. It's going to be a beautiful fence. I'm going to landscape around the perimeter of the fence, typical of the type of landscaping that you would see in a river forest home. I'm kind of creating a bit of a backyard environment in the front yard of this multifamily building, which is unusual, and I think it won't be unsightly. In fact, I think it will be the opposite, and it'll be a great space for the tenants in the building to enjoy. So originally I said, I think on the application, 5 or 5.5, but I'm absolutely willing to limit it to a 5-foot fence. And it just provides a little bit more of a barrier, less ability for someone to reach over the fence or hop over the fence. That is really my thought on wanting to be higher than 4 feet. When I found out that the commercial limitation was 4 feet, I just said to myself, that seems a little low to me for a multifamily building. And I see plenty of fences in the village that exceed that height. And so I started on this process, and here I am, respectfully asking for the variance from 4 feet to 5 feet. I'll conform to the residential standard as far as the type of fence, 80% or whatever that standard is, as far as the ability to see through the fence. I think that will mitigate any safety issues at the corner of the drive and the sidewalk. And then regarding the shared driveway issue, their property has a driveway, our property has a driveway, they're contiguous, there's no barrier between them. Call it what you want, I consider it a shared driveway. There's lots of cars going, using basically driveway for both buildings going up and down. So
any other questions coming this evening? Close the public portion.
Thank you for your consideration.
Okay. Okay, what do you think? Build a 4-foot high fence. Out.
Correct.
Residential, he couldn't build.
No. He could build what he's asked.
Resident, yeah, corner. I thought just. Yeah.
No. In any residential property, R2 zoning district, in the front yard, the fence is allowed to be fabricated metal construction, is allowed to be up to 6 feet high, is required to be 80% open to view. As a matter of right, R2 property.
We can't deny him regardless of what we do. The question is, we want to give him permission to build or recommend that he be given permission to build a fence more than 4 feet tall. More than 4 feet tall, then the benefit is it becomes 80% open.
That 5 foot is 80% open, then a 4 feet.
Right, does somebody want to make motion so that we
make a motion to recommend to approve the variation.
Right. Is there a second? You want a second demo? high because nobody's. How do we make a motion that variation five limit of no higher than 5 feet?
Five-foot fence is 80%. It would have to be 80%.
That is, the application was to substitute the fence that is 6 feet high and 80% open to view for the 4 foot high, 50% open to view fence, and the condition that Chairman Martin is applying here is that it is the same type of fence, the same 80% open to view, but limited to 5 foot high. Okay, if you think about the fence in front of Keystone Park, you drive down Lake Street. Mm-hmm. At the time when we rewrote the fence regulations, I meticulously measured that fence. That fence is actually only about 78% open to view, but that's largely to do with a lot of the extra ornaments that is placed in there. Typically, an 80% open to view fence has half inch by half inch bars, typically vertical, that has a space slightly less than 4 inches. The 4 inches is so that people don't stick their head through it and get stuck, and the fire department has to come with a buzz of life and cut the fence apart. So that's kind of what it is. It's a fence where you have half inch member, almost a 4 inch space, half inch member, almost a 4 inch space. That is typically what an 80% open to view.
Open to view.
Well, okay. Assume that it's like four inch slab, 4 inch opening, 4 inch slab, 4 inch opening. Clearly, a whole lot less open to view.
That is our village consultant.
Here, it's not just the 5 foot condition, it meets all requirements of the road.
Along with this?
Yes, I would.
Entitled to a fence. My thought is he's entitled to a fence. Or a 5 foot fence. Or open space that you. Right. You want to call the roll?
Chairman Martin?
Yes.
Ms. Davis?
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski?
Yes.
Mr. Lucchese?
No.
Ms. Shoemaker?
Yes.
Mr. Smetana?
Yes.
That'll be the recommendation of the County Board of Appeals to the Village Board. Same as we said to the last people, we have to approve the findings of fact. Edits tell you when it's. All right, so the next matter on the agenda this evening is the proposed amendment to the zoning code to address accessory dwelling units. Can we give Mr. Housefield? Before the zoning board, all says it's May, I believe. At that time, the village had a consultant come in. This is before you were. The village had a consultant come in. Well, it was all done by Zoom. There were three people from the consultant. There was a gentleman from Oak Park and a woman from Evanston, all who were part of the presentation. That was the first time that we had really been given background as to what was going to happen. So we continued everything till the next month, till June of 2020. At that time, our discussion, and we asked the consultant asked us, there was no ordinance presented. They asked us what would we want to have in the ordinance, and we gave them some standards that we wanted the ordinance to address. So that was June of 2021. Didn't hear from them in July. We didn't hear from them in August. We didn't hear from September. We didn't hear from them the rest of the year. We didn't hear anything about this ADU until August of this year, perhaps. And we found out, you know, that the consultant was gone. I don't know if they were fired or quit or what. And Mr. Housefield has taken their place, and we rely on his expertise a great deal. I want to make it clear that this memorandum says no recommendations were formally made to the village board. That's because nobody ever presented us with an ordinance. And if anybody says that this delay is our fault, they're wrong, because the village never followed up, or the village consultant never followed up. That's important that trustees realize we've been waiting over a year for this proposed ordinance, so we have something to discuss. So that's all I got to say, John. Now it's your turn.
All right. Thanks, Chairman Martin and members of the CBA. For the record, my name is John Housefield. I've been a village resident for 24 years, village's planning consultant for 25 or 26 years. So I actually was working in the village before I moved here. So what we're here to talk about is accessory dwelling units, or ADUs. So you should all have a copy of my memorandum dated October 7th. I prepared this with Jackie Wells, who's a senior planner with our firm. Jackie and I head up our zoning practice. We've worked all over the country. We've worked on ADU and zoning ordinances all over the United States. And every state and every town does them differently, if they do them at all. So what my memorandum lays out is, what is an ADU? And when I say ADU, it's accessory dwelling unit. What is an ADU? Sort of the pros and cons, or the pros of ADUs. I then go into, in the memorandum, why we're here talking about it, sort of what got us to this point, like why is River Forest discussing ADUs? We then laid out some assumptions that if we were going to draft an initial ordinance just to begin the discussion, which we've done, we wanted to lay out very carefully our assumptions that we use to write that draft ordinance. And the reason being is, when municipalities tend to talk zoning, they forget why they're talking about zoning, and too quickly get into a debate of 10 feet, 12 feet, 14 feet, 13 and a half feet, articulated, whatever. And they don't step back and say, what are we trying to achieve? Where we talk about how we're going to get there, where do we want to go? Why are we doing this? So we've laid out our assumptions, and then based off of those assumptions, we've crafted a draft ordinance for consideration. And the reason we did that is, if the Zoning Board of Appeals goes through our assumptions and says, I don't like these assumptions, we change them per your direction, and that will change the ordinance. But we want to make sure we're changing what we're doing. The zoning language is how we do it. But before we get into how we do it, we need to talk about why or what we're doing. So we sort of laid it out in that order. So I'll walk through this with you. You should have it. And if at any point in time you have questions, please do so. So an accessory dwelling unit, anecdotally, they've been referred to as like granny flats, in-law units, mother-in-law units. They're a separate independent dwelling unit on a single-family residential property. And they have their own ingress and egress. They have their own separate living quarters, you know, bathroom, kitchen, living, bedroom, whatever they are. They don't have to walk through the primary structure to get to it. They can come and go as they please, fully independent. Accessory dwelling units can be located in basically three different ways. One is to be located on the interior of a house, a single-family home. Rearrange the floor plan, put a new door in so they can come in and out, but it looks like it's part of the primary structure. The other way is to sort of build an addition onto the house, and it should still architecturally match the house, but it's sort of an addition onto the house. That's an accessory dwelling unit that blends into the house, but it's not within the original envelope of the house. And the other way is to have it be in a detached structure, like a garage, a detached garage. And you could have an accessory dwelling unit above on the second floor of a garage, like an old coach house. Some of the, we still have a few of those around the community. So two of those are part of the primary structure, the primary house. And one way to do an ADU is then to have it be part of the accessory dwelling, the accessory structure, like a detached garage. Right now, ADUs are not allowed in the village. So that's what an accessory dwelling unit is. Why is River Forest examining ADUs at this time? Simply put, the affordable housing plan that was adopted a couple of years ago identified in that plan that as a additional consideration, the village should examine the possibility of having ADUs allowed as a special use in the R1 and R2 zoning districts. And that's the way it's worded in the affordable housing plan. As an additional consideration, the village should examine accessory dwelling units in the R1 and R2 as a special use permit, is how it's worded. So we're here looking at it primarily because of that plan, which was adopted by the village, and the recommendation in there to explore this as a possibility. It doesn't say village has to do it. It doesn't say it shouldn't do it. It says this needs to be explored. So that's why we're here today, and that's why I think they initiated a process with somebody else a while ago. So that's why the River Forest is considering ADUs. It's really informed also by a couple of plans, and let me read these. So in the 2019 comprehensive plan is a 20-year planning horizon document. I did the last one in 2019. I also did the one 15 years before that here in the village. But the comprehensive plan states to maintain the village as an exceptional residential community, to retain its predominant single-family detached dwelling character and varied architectural styles, and provide the variety of housing options necessary to accommodate residents at all stages of life. That's the comprehensive plan. It also states to maintain the appropriate balance of housing types within the community to provide for the housing needs of residents, and to encourage new residential development that provides the needs of the village's population. The comprehensive plan doesn't specifically state ADUs should be explored, and it doesn't specifically recommend ADUs. It talks about the predominant single family character, provide a range of housing types and quality, and to maintain housing options for people within the village that would allow housing at every stage of life. So the comprehensive talks about that, does not specifically mention ADUs. The 2020 Affordable Housing Plan states, and I'll read this, to explore amending the zoning ordinance to accommodate accessory dwelling units as a special use in the R1 and R2 zoning districts. Affordable Housing Plan also states the provision of affordable housing, including integrated supportive housing, can significantly increase the livability of River Forest community for many. Integrated supportive housing, when the Affordable Housing Plan was crafted, there were some folks, whether it would be adults with learning disabilities or functional disabilities, that allow them to have independent living, but in a slightly more structured manner. An ADU would allow that, as opposed to having some of these individuals have to go out and find an apartment or something someplace else. So It also dovetails with the village's initiative to be an aging-in-place community. It's a, another option for maybe that might be appealing to some seniors to have an accessory dwelling unit within a single-family home environment and neighborhood as opposed to an apartment somewhere. So, and primarily it was to provide affordable housing. In fact, the affordable housing plan specifically says to look at it as a means of affording providing affordable housing. So that's where this comes from those two plans. So we crafted what we would consider to be initial assumptions. So if the village examines affordable housing, like the plan says, we should examine it or at least consider it. And after considering it, the village says, yeah, we want to do this. We've made some assumptions as to what should frame the ordinance. And if the Zoning Board of Appeals doesn't like any of these assumptions, we can change the assumptions, and that would then result in different language. So the language we wrote in our draft ordinance is based off of these assumptions. So I want to read through these assumptions to see, we can talk about them, you can agree with them, disagree with them, whatever, but this was our starting point for discussion purposes, okay? So these are the assumptions. Number one is that the single family detached character of the village's neighborhoods should be preserved, protected, and enhanced. And every document and the heritage of the village is one of its defining characteristics are the single family neighborhoods. The village and most planning documents doesn't want to do anything to jeopardize that. So first and foremost, that's the first chalk line that gets snapped, is to maintain the integrity of our neighborhoods. Okay. The second assumption is that ADUs should be allowed as a special use in the R1 and R2 zoning districts. This is exactly the wording that was in the affordable housing plan. If it's considered, the consideration was to consider them as a special use in the R1 and R2 districts. The R1 and R2 districts are the single family detached zoning districts, and by making it a special use, it would require them to come in front of the village to get a special use. They would have to meet the standards. It could not be done as of right, okay? That was the other assumption. If the village does it, it should be a special use in the R1 and R2.
That assumption, how many owners, single family homes in the R1 and R2 district did you talk to?
For that assumption, we didn't. We took that directly because that's the way it was recommended in the affordable housing plan, which was adopted by the village board. So that says that the village should consider doing it as a special use in R1 and R2. So the assumption we made was consistent with the affordable housing plan, that it should be considered as a special use in the R1 and R2. So we had several different people, over the course, I think, 5 or 7 meetings over 9 months when we did the affordable housing plan. We had several residents speak at several meetings. I don't know that anybody spoke specifically about the ADUs or pro or con, because it wasn't a hard recommendation. The recommendation was to consider it or to look at it. So we didn't speak.
As you made the assumption that it should be allowed as a special use, somebody made that without any input from the owners of.
Not entirely, because there was single family, a number of residents spoke at the several meetings for the affordable housing plan.
But you just said none of them addressed ADUs.
I can't, but they supported the plan, and it was considered by the plan commission at a public hearing at multiple meetings, and it was discussed at length by the village board at 2 meetings and adopted, and that was one of the provisions in there. So,
you know, the provision was that it be considered.
Correct, exactly
my,
right.
My question is, did anybody express support of it?
There were residents who spoke in favor of what was in there and that we should look at it.
Who spoke in favor of ADUs?
Yes, there were residents who said it was a good idea, and plan commission members who are residents who supported the addition of that in here as well. So that's why it's a consideration in one of our assumptions.
We're going around in circles.
Pardon?
We're going around in circles because they supported this as a consideration. I'm asking you, who's ever said, I live in the R1 district and I support an ADU.
I don't know that anybody has made that statement on the record, but we've had residents who live in the R1, R2 supported the plan that recommended we consider it.
Well, the plan is
right.
Is huge.
Well, and this is why these are our 10 assumptions. Right. And so in order to craft, that's a good point, Chairman Martin. So in order for us to craft an initial draft ordinance to even be discussed, we have to make assumptions to get to be able to draft something. So these are the assumptions we made so we could get something to talk about, but we could very much change any one of these at your direction. But I want everybody to know what we started with. You got to start somewhere, and this is what we started with. So our assumption was that if the village considers doing it, they should consider it as a special use in the R1 and R2. Number three was to minimize the impacts on neighbors, and ADU should be allowed to be constructed internal or attached to the existing primary dwelling. The assumption for this is, I remember I said an ADU could be part of the primary structure, right? Or it could be like an above a garage, detached. And our assumption, and again, just for purposes of starting somewhere, so we could craft the language, is that it has to be part of the primary structure. And the primary reason for this is to provide more consistent with the character of a single-family neighborhood. So character of single-family neighborhoods is the activity, the living, the residence component is in the primary house. And then back on the lot, you may have a detached home, but nobody's living back there. No one's living in that back of your yard next to your neighbor's open space or their private backyard, right? All the residents, for the most part, live in that same building envelope, right? No one's living in that far back area. So if we have accessory dwelling units, our initial assumption, if we go forward, is that we think it ought to be in the primary structure and not be allowed to be like an apartment above a garage, because that puts residences adjacent to your neighbor's backyard, which is the most private part of a single family detached neighborhood. So our assumption is that it would have to be in the primary structure. And again, we can change that, but that's what we started with. Right. The next one is the attached ADU should be integrated into the design of the primary structure so as to appear as a single family home. If every planning document, the village has ever had, and a defining characteristic is the character and quality of our single family homes, shouldn't do anything that detracts from that character of a single family home. Therefore, our assumption number four is that if there is an accessory dwelling unit in a primary structure, you shouldn't be able to know that from viewing the house from the outside. Right? It has to look like a single family home. So again, if you think of these, when someone comes in, if they were to pass this and someone came in and said, I want an accessory dwelling unit, these would be your standards. Like, does it look like a single family home? Can you tell there isn't one there? So four is, is it integrated completely into the design of the home? Next one, number five, is that ADUs should be required to be rented at affordable rates. And I'll explain why we put this one in here. The sole reason the village is even exploring ADUs is because the affordable housing plan is said to explore ADUs as a means, another way of providing affordable units, all right? So if the village considers ADUs that aren't affordable, it's not supporting why we're even talking about it. So if an ADU is expensive to rent, then it's not achieving why we're even exploring them. So if we're going to consider an ADU, it's got to be affordable, which removes the economic incentive to put one in, right? So if the affordable housing plan said explore it as a means of providing affordable housing, then if you're going to have one, it has to be rented solely at affordable rates. And that is deemed by the previous ZBA request that you heard earlier with the attorney checking. The Affordable Housing and Appeals Act by the Department of Housing and Affairs from Illinois publishes, I believe, every 2 years, the new housing rates that have to be met. And it doesn't go like HUD, which is a certain percentage of your income. That's not the way it works in Illinois. That's what one person was sort of asking and implying. But it literally is, they look at all the housing prices in Cook County. They do it by county, right? And then they look at all of the rental for 1, 2, 3 bedroom and home price, sales price, as well as condominium price. And they say, this is considered affordable for Cook County, no matter how much a person makes, right? And they set that standard and they update it, I think, every 2 years, all right? So our recommendation is that any ADU, if the village has them, has to be affordable, or why are we even talking about it? And that affordable benchmark or requirement is established by the state every 2 years on an ongoing basis. Six, a mechanism such as a deed restriction and or an annual registration program should be utilized to ensure all ADUs are rented as affordable. If one of the caveats for ADUs is that they be affordable, we have to have a means of regulating that. The person could come in and say, oh yeah, it's going to be affordable. And then the next year go out and have a real nice ADU and rent it out for $2,000 a month. And that's not affordable. So if we're going to have the affordability of these units as a standard, we have to have a way of regulating the fact that it is affordable, or they would lose the ability to rent it as an ADU. Again, these are the assumptions we made. The primary dwelling should be owner-occupied. This is one that is common in communities that do have ADUs, and still most communities don't allow ADUs. Some do, some don't. In some states, it's required. California, you have to allow it as of right. They're the only state like that. But what this says is that if the owner of the property has to live in the primary structure, so we don't have people coming in and taking a single-family property, making it a two-unit property, and then just renting them out, right? There needs to be a little bit burden on the person who wants to do it because it's their home, and they're putting in a unit in their home. So one of the caveats or conditions or assumptions is that the primary structure is owned by the person who's applying for an ADU. The maximum size of the ADU should be limited to ensure it remains pertinent to the primary dwelling. You don't want somebody to come in with a 4,000 square foot house and say, I'm proposing a 2,000 square foot ADU. That's a duplex. That's not an ADU. That gets away from the idea or mission of an ADU. So the size of an ADU has to be regulated so it is less than the size of the house. It has to be, you know, secondary to the primary structure, not too large.
John, does are you dealing with that just to make it clear that the in accordance with all the provisions of the zoning code, it has to meet the FAR, it has to meet
absolutely
the coverage.
Yeah. But yes. So we're not proposing there be any relief granted for ADUs in terms of setbacks or size or FAR lot coverage. Single family standards are the single family standards. And if you propose an ADU from the outside, it has to look like a single family house. You can't know it's there. You shouldn't know it's there. And it should be the same size as all the other single family homes or what's allowed in the district. But what we're talking about is if someone came into and bought a house and rehabbed it, and it was a 4,000 square foot home, and they do the walls and everything inside, and they have a 2,000 square foot primary unit and a 2,000 square foot accessory dwelling unit. That's not an accessory dwelling unit. They've essentially established a duplex. So there has to be a clear primary dwelling and then a smaller accessory dwelling. So we're saying there has to be that difference, which means you have to regulate the size of the accessory dwelling unit within the structure. The ADU should have a separate entrance from the primary structure. Primary dwelling, the ADU entrance should be located at the rear or the interior side of the primary dwelling to maintain the single-family detached character. You don't want a single-family home where there has two front doors, or if it's on a corner property, a front door on both sides. The accessory dwelling unit should be accessible from an interior side or the rear of the property. So independent in and out, but it doesn't look like it's a duplex or as it goes to the design of the house. And then the last one is a minimum of one off-street parking space should be provided for the ADU, and that parking space should not interfere with other required parking spaces. For the R1 and R2 single-family zoning district, the village requires two enclosed parking spaces. Most people, that's the driveway that goes back to a two-car garage or more, right? If you were proposing to have an ADU, you have to have a designated space for that resident, okay? That cannot be a space in your driveway because you would have to jockey that car to get to your two required spaces, right? So if you have an ADU, you have to have one designated on-site space just for that ADU person. And that space and ingress and egress to that space could not interfere with the two required spaces for the primary structure. That could be a hurdle in a lot of homes, but you can't. We've got a driveway and two college kids. We're jockeying cars all the time, and you don't want that if you're renting out an ADU. So you have to have a designated parking space that doesn't interfere with access to, if that car's parked, getting to your two required spaces, all right? So those are the 10 assumptions that we said, if we're going to start drafting an ordinance, let's start with these. And to Chairman Martin's point, we're not proposing any changes to, like, if you want an ADU, you get an extra 400 square feet, or you get a bigger FAR or bigger lot coverage or reduced setbacks. The single family standards are the single family standards.
And if you want an ADU, you've got to make it work within those single family standards, okay? So to get to where we could draft an ordinance language, we had to say, these are our assumptions so we could get to drafting. So these are our assumptions. So I guess before we look at the language, is there any questions about these assumptions, agreement, disagreement? Do you think, like, we couldn't have ADUs and comply with the first one, single-family detached character of the village? Maybe, like, I don't know how we could have ADUs and maintain a single-family character. So, but is there any discussion of these 10 assumptions, yay or nay, or any other assumptions you would like to see added or any that you might like to see removed before we get into the language? Because if we change the assumptions, the language is going to change. That's why I phrased the memo like this.
Are there any other villages, towns, whatever, in Chicago that have an ordinance?
We've looked around. There were, with the time we drafted this, there were a few communities that were drafting them. We're doing zoning right now in, I think, 6 or 7 states, several projects in multiple states, and in a lot of communities, we propose this and it gets taken out. Some communities have it. So I'm sure there are communities in Illinois that have ADUs. I don't know offhand what they are.
Wait, he had this presentation.
Right. I think we heard at the presentation in June 2021 that Oak Park permits ADUs and perhaps Evanston as well.
Right. Yeah.
But when you compare our zoning code for municipalities and make recommendations, we don't often get compared to Oak Park and Evanston because those are different type of communities.
Right.
You know, what about Wheaton? What about Ridge? What about Glen Ellen? What about the North Shore communities that are more like River Forest? Do any of those communities permit ADUs?
Not that I'm aware of. And I'm not saying this to advocate for or discourage ADUs or promote ADUs. I'm just here to sort of answer questions. I don't even know how many ordinances we've written in Illinois and other states. The majority don't have ADUs yet. It's something that gets discussed in a lot of communities. But a lot of communities aren't quite ready to go there. In some communities, and just for background information, in some communities, well, let's say the state of California, I'll say this, the state of California has a severe housing problem, all right? They require, if I've got this correct, and I'm pretty sure I do, every single family zoning district in any municipality has to accommodate, as of right, 3 residential dwelling units, 2 in the primary structure and 1 in an accessory structure. Most states permit them. No other state requires them. And the majority of, again, just speaking from my experience, that's it. Having worked throughout Illinois and across the United States, the majority of the clients we've worked with do not adopt ADUs. They talk about it, but they're just not quite ready to do that yet because they don't feel the need, I guess is the best way to put it. They have single-family homes. They have multifamily. They have townhome districts. They have apartments. They have condominiums. They have a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. And so most just don't see the need yet. They're not opposed to them per se. They just don't think it's needed in their community, I guess is the best way to put it.
Seems to me what's driving this conversation is the Housing Act. How many affordable housing units?
It's a good question. Right now, according to the last numbers put out by the state, I believe the village is short 39 affordable housing units. So the state determines, and I think it's in the table. I was looking at it on my phone.
But since that came out, we as a zoning board have recommended 3 more housing affordable.
Right.
I don't know whether the village adopted those requirements or not. They didn't. There were 39 short. And the people from Park and Evanston, I think, said that the absorption rate or the use was 2 or 3 ADUs.
Mm-hmm.
What is it going to do? adopt an ADU ordinance that may take, if we get 3 a year, it's going to take 15 years to get other.
Right. The state of Illinois requires or sets a threshold of 10%. So in the Affordable Housing Act, that there's a 10% number. And if you are a community that has less than 10% affordable housing of your housing stock, single family, multifamily, rental owner, occupied, whatever, if you look at your housing stock, if you have less than 10%, you are required to have an affordable housing plan. All right? Doesn't mean you're legally required to have the 10%, but you legally required to adopt a plan. So the village is at 9%. So the village is at 9%.
We've met that.
Correct. We've met that. So the village, based on the state's last round, was they determined we were at 9% affordable units, and we were supposed to be at 10, and I think the short was 39 units back when it was done a couple of years ago. So the state requirement is to have a plan adopted. There's no state mandate that you have to get to the 10%, because I know in a lot of communities you can't get there because of economics or land value or whatever. You can't. But you have to have a plan in place that would accommodate it, and we have the plan. So we meet the state's requirement in terms of having a plan, but the plan identified things the village should do additionally to consider moving the needle a little bit more to provide more, and this is one of those things to consider. It's not a recommendation to have to do it. It's a recommendation to consider it, which is why we're here today. So we don't have to, we can go through it, but based on those assumptions, on the last page, page 404, we had the preliminary draft standards that if those assumptions were met and the village wanted to have, or you wanted to recommend ADUs, these eight standards ADU provisions on page 404 is the language we would propose. This would be changed to chapter 7 of general applicability, and we would also change chapter 21, the land use chart. Land use chart says what uses you can and cannot do in every district. We would add accessory dwelling unit to the residential districts R1 and R2 in that chart and identify it as a special use in the R1 and R2. So it'd be changing two sections of the code. So, and this, these, the language that you see on page 4 basically is sort of codification language to those assumptions on the previous page. Right?
The rationale for is that it permits older family members live independently their family, but to have the support of their family. Those people are really going to.
Well, I suppose they could rent it for nothing. I don't know. It's a good question. I guess that's a legal question. Is they zoning ordinances a while ago got away from defining family for the most part, right? And so. I suppose the most affordable thing is free. So I don't know if you could say free or at a rent that was below the affordable rate listed by the village. I do know that a couple of years ago, Oakbrook was exploring ADUs. I don't think they ever finished their comprehensive zoning ordinance update, not just for ADUs, but for they were doing a whole ordinance update. I don't think it ever got finished or completed. And one of the things I know they were examining, and I could look into it if you'd like, was ADUs. And what was driving that there, or one of the variables, was they have an increasing percentage of the population that were sort of that were foreign born, and it was customary to have different generations under one roof, so they were trying to accommodate the zoning regulations to allow that in single-family districts. I don't know that that ever got codified or completed. That was a discussion a couple of years ago, and I don't think it ever got adopted. Not that it was denied, I just don't think they ever got through the process. But you're right. So accommodating seniors, accommodating extended families or multiple generations, and accommodating adult individuals with disabilities, learning disabilities, physical disabilities, whatever, it would make it another viable option potentially for independent living. In a slightly more attainable manner than going out and trying to get an apartment. So those are all components, provided they be affordable, that it would help out as well. That was discussed in the affordable housing plan. So that's why we're here. These were our assumption. This is the language that we would propose. If this were to go forward, we would propose it goes forward, at least as a starting point for discussion. So I can go through, if you'd like, Chairman Martin, the preliminary draft standards.
To me, the preliminary draft standards are basically this, the
with a little bit more specificity on some of them, but yes, exactly right.
I don't think
so. Okay. Yeah. Right.
Whether we have any.
Special uses don't come before.
They come through you.
But through us?
But very rarely.
Okay.
Very rarely.
And that's a great question. And let me answer it this way. And the attorney can chime in as well. There's always sound advice from attorneys who deal with this all the time as well. I've been doing it for about 25 years. So best way to explain a special use, I think, is it is a use that may or may not be appropriate in a zoning district. Provided it meets certain standards, it may be deemed appropriate, but it's not as of right deemed appropriate, right? And so the way I would see it is when we put these in place, and I say I came before the zoning board for a special use for an ADU, and it was just a horrible stuck-on thing on the side of my house. It didn't match the architecture. You'd be like, doesn't reflect a single-family character of the neighborhood. It does not integrate it to the design of the house at all. So these could actually be adopted in the code as your standards of review, in addition to whatever other special use standards there were, because these were specifically for ADU consideration. So these, together with other special use considerations or standards of review, would be the standards by which you would also be reviewing consideration for ADUs.
Yeah, how I would characterize it is that a special use is defined in the code, and then there are standards set forth in the code.
Yeah, I'm curious as what those standards are.
But you can create.
There are no. So, for example, when somebody comes to a variance, we have these.
Right. Yes, absolutely. Well, so there's not the LaSalle factors.
Correct.
There's very specific case law with regards to variance. Special uses are not exactly evaluated on the same type of factors. But what I would say about a special use is that when someone comes in to ask for a special use, that's an opportunity to, shall we say, impose additional conditions because they're asking for something that's not as a matter of right in whatever district that they're in.
And we sort of wrote these to be able to fairly effectively be standards that have to be met. You know, demonstrate to us there is some sort of thing that would regulate and in fact, put in place requirements that it be leased as affordable in perpetuity. Does it match the design of the neighborhood and the design of the house? Demonstrate to us you have a parking space for this individual that won't interfere with your two parking spaces and ingress and egress to those. So these, in effect, would sort of serve as standards for anybody seeking one, if you wanted to even go that route.
Is there a provision in our zoning code that says when you the new residential unit make some kind of payment to the school district?
That is only for unimproved where you're building a house for the first time.
There'd be no right now we any condition in about being school age children. So if you got why couldn't we expand the don't know the number of, that says when you're...
A couple of things. I'm going to handle the second one over to the attorney. The first one is, are those determinations part of the zoning ordinance or the municipal code? That donation of the impact of the school districts for single-family construction. Is that in the zoning ordinance, or is that in the municipal code somewhere else? The reason I ask, if it's in the municipal code, it's out of the purview of the ZBA. You can recommend the board do that.
We can make that a condition.
That's what I'm saying. It wouldn't be codified language to the zoning ordinance. It'd be a recommendation, that's what I said, of you guys to the village board to make that change. But it would be outside of this language.
10-23.
Perfect.
It's in the zoning ordinance.
Read that off. What does it say?
Dedication of school lands or payments of fees in lieu thereof. It's like four pages.
Okay.
But it's 10-23-4.
And you said that's for, and again, I'm just asking this, sort of thinking out loud here. That's for properties that are vacant and have never had a house on them?
Yeah.
So if you had a house and you tore it down and built a new one.
That's not. That's,
so do we have any vacant single family properties that have never had a house on them?
15 years ago when I came here, 101 Keystone
okay.
was a lot of record that was a corner that was with the the house next to it, and a developer bought 101 that corner lot of record, built a new house on it, and he had to contribute.
So an example, and you'll know this house. If we look at Forest and Hawthorne on the corner, there's a big house, but the lot on the corner, I think they tore it down, and there's like a nice gazebo there and a big, huge yard.
Right.
They wouldn't need it there because at one point in history, there was a house on it.
Correct.
Okay, interesting. All right. So if that was the thing, we could put that, we'd have to put language then in there if there was a lot left in the village that has never had a home on it that could be built. I don't know.
Why couldn't you just say that if there's any new build, you have to comply with this?
Sure. If you wanted to do that, we could put that in there, sure. And I'll let you speak to, like, the thing about the kids or
I wasn't suggesting
okay.
there be any prohibition on kids.
Right, just the potential impact of the school district.
Right.
Okay, fair enough.
I just don't think anyone would do that. There's a lot of hoops you'd have to jump through.
Right.
Let me ask just generally, if we were to pass to this, goes on to the village board, they pass the ordinance. Do we get any credit or any legal points with the state of Illinois?
No, they
we're
discount,
already there, right?
Yeah, they discount okay. number of units.
And that's okay. And you don't have the units, you need the plan.
Yeah,
and we have the plan.
Correct.
Okay.
It's 100%
so
correct.
There's nothing village if we pass this.
It doesn't put you into a different
right. Okay.
compliant category or anything like
okay.
that. And I echo your I agree with your concerns about the biggest challenge of an ADU in River Forest is counter to the very reason we are here talking about ADUs, and that is as a means of potentially applying or creating affordable dwelling units in the village, right? If someone wanted to do it because they wanted to create an affordable unit, they could do all this and lease a unit. Like if they had an adult or who wanted an independent unit or a mother-in-law or extended family or whatever else, they could do that and they wouldn't be motivated by the money piece. But foregoing that motivation to do it because you just wanted to do it, it's a big expenditure to go through, to be limited to leasing it out for a one bedroom or a studio or whatever for $700 a month or whatever. It would be tough. It's just for the same reason affordable housing is difficult in affluent communities, affordable ADUs would be difficult. And for the same reasons, the same economics are at play. But it would provide a means through which someone could do it if they wanted to.
Variation. they can come in and say, put an addition on their house right now if it is.
No, they could do an addition, but you can't have two units in a single family residential. And I don't know, that's a use variation. That's not like a development standard variation. I don't know if the village would grant through straight variation procedures a use variation in the village in single family. I don't know if they've ever done it. I don't know if it's worded such to allow a use variations and development variation standards are different. And I, through the plan development process, you could get use waivers or relief. You could do uses you wouldn't otherwise be able to do. But through the variation process, I don't know that the village has ever done a use variation. I'm not aware of it.
What's going to be out of
it? Clifford has to give the permit for the plumbing, the electrical, the kitchen, the bathroom, the whatever.
I want to have, I'm living apart from my wife. What are you going to do?
Well, you know, the thing is that if a property where it said, well, I want this suite of rooms for my old father, and it's connected by a doorway. He has a separate door to the outside. We're talking R1 district here, absolutely totally enveloped in the house, but you know, it's a door connects the suite of rooms to the family room. I looked at it as one dwelling unit.
Right.
Now, for it to be ADU, I would assume that we're going to have to, it has to be built to be totally separate.
Right.
And you have to have a firewall between them. And that separate dwelling unit could be, you know, they could like not talk to each other, just like never.
Yeah.
Come and go as they please. Totally separate entrances, no communication at all.
Right.
Otherwise, if it's connected and it says, like the one said, you know, it's a suite of rooms for my old dad, still part of the family. That's the way I saw it at the time.
Haven't we discussed earlier this year, a little different, the garage, somebody was putting a parent in a garage, weren't they? Or I was thinking, didn't we?
It was special use.
Is that a special
use? That was the one special use that I've been on the board for. Yeah. They wanted to bake.
Right.
So it's a good point. So, you know, historically, some bigger homes would have a coach house, right?
Yeah.
Where they have a garage or whatever. But right now, and for as long as I've been around, the village has not allowed a separate dwelling in a detached accessory structure on the primary single-family residential property. So they wouldn't be able to get the permits to do the plumbing, the bathroom, the whatever else, the separate living unit in a detached. And, again, one of the assumptions. So if the ZBA said, you know, well, we're cool with the idea of having an apartment above the garage, then we would change our draft. But to us, and again, an assumption as a starting point for discussion, one of the most valued things in a single-family detached neighborhood, besides being the architecture, the character, and everything else, is the sanctum of people's backyards, right? I mean, it just is. It's where they gather, where they chat, where they hang out with friends, where their kids play, where they huddle around their fire pit or barbecue, whatever else. And it didn't seem to be consistent with the village's theme of protecting the overall existing character of single family homes, to introduce residences right on the other side of your property line back in where your backyard is. So as a starting point, we said, we're assuming we're not going to allow it in the garage. If you want to do it, you have to do it in the house, because that's where all the living takes place in the neighborhood. So if that assumption were changed, we allowed it above the garage, we'd have to craft our language and then be back. But we didn't make that assumption. Well, and I guess all I can say is this, is the way it was worded in the affordable housing plan, I think it was listed as an additional consideration. The plan had recommendations what to do. And then aside from the recommendations, it had a section called additional considerations, the village could consider. And this was one of those things the village could consider. So what you do with that consideration is up to you. Either reject sort of our draft, modify our draft, accept our draft, but whatever you want. But we wanted to give you something that was actionable either way.
You gave us something that was much, much more actionable than the other consultants that the village hired, and you did it by yourself instead of having five people at the meeting, and we appreciate that. This is the kind of decision I'm not comfortable making without the whole board present. You know, we could do it tonight. We could either adopt yours or tell the board, the trustees, we're not interested. I'd like to suggest that we continue this until our November meeting. Mr. Plywoods will be able to attend then. We can have the whole group discuss it and decide how we want to proceed. I don't know how anybody else feels, but
I agree with that. I think it's been a long night already, and if we had another month, we'd have more time to do individual research on this topic.
And if there's anything more you'd like me to look at to supply the ZBA with prior to the next meeting, let me know and I can put my
Why don't you look at some of these suburbs that you're constantly comparing our zoning ordinance with? If anybody beside Oak Park and Evanston and Chicago, I think all those three entities have ADU use, but you know, what about the more single family suburban?
We work in a bunch of those, even some of them on a retainer basis, doing like what I do here. And off the top of my head, I don't know that any of them have it, but I'll double check.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, this is like kind of like an ad hoc multifamily. You're putting it's kind of ad hoc. What I would like to know and wouldn't necessarily expect you to answer is, what is the pressures on utilities and public services, roads, traffic, things like that, by creating a multifamily and a single family district? Because obviously there's water system is not. I'm just curious as if there's a way to quantify that impact.
Discuss it with the public works director. Off the top of my head, in other places where we've done it, it's non-impacting. If you're talking about, you know, 1 in 9 kids, 7 people in my house growing up, so a house here with 3 people, and you add one more person in an ADU, I don't think it's going to materially impact stormwater or water delivery or electricity or police fire. Well, I can reach the public works director just to sort of quantify that if you'd like me to.
Obviously, I think if you have it. Multifamily district is that the civil need for that type of air capacity, then versus to ad hoc. The second point I would like to make, other board members to consider before we reconvene, is that if we go ahead and recommend some, what I see as a potential problem here is that we have these standards, and also we have owners coming in. Experience. So it says here buildable lot. So if we want to make addition to the special use, we consider stating that there can be no variances associated with this version, that people aren't saying, well, I want to, you know, reduce
not necessarily put us in a position.
That's good, and I can add that as an 11th initial assumption that there would have to be meet the standards established for the districts of R1 and R2 and not require a variance to accommodate. I can put that.
We also have any suggestions for Mr. House?
In theory, if every single family home met this standard, then every single family home could have an ADU. And that's, I don't think a lot could meet it. And my first home here was on a teeny lot. I couldn't even provide enough parking for me. I could never have an ADU because I couldn't provide any parking. So.
Meeting be listed on the agenda.
In the meantime, while Cliff's getting ready to call roll, I will talk to Public Works about infrastructure. I will contact sort of the usual suspects of the most similar types of communities in the region we've done when we've done other zoning studies and whatever, sort of see what they are. The historic housing stock, the more affluent. I'll do that for next time as well.
And it looks to me like Oak Brook passed something this summer.
They did. Okay, just for the whole ordinance or just the ADUs?
It's for all accessory structures, including ADUs.
Okay, good. I think they were working on it for quite a while, yeah. Take a look at that one.
Okay, who motioned?
I.
Okay. Please. Okay, calling the roll. Chairman Martin.
Yes.
Ms. Davis.
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski?
Yes.
Mr. Lucchese?
Yes.
Ms. Shoemaker?
Yes.
Mr. Smetana?
Yes.
Anybody else in the audience who wants to address it?
Move to dismiss.
Aye.
Thank you all for longer than usual, but a lot of interesting things to.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.